I want to explore the subject today with you, especially as we come to memorialize in this portion of our assembly service what it means to be a disciple of Christ. After all, that's what the memorial it is that he's given. He said, do this in remembrance of me. But then what are we remembering? What are we here to understand and refresh our minds? And so I want to take a small slice of that today and look at it from the perspective of what does it mean to be a disciple of Christ. But even before we get into that, why does being a disciple of Christ matter? Why is it important? And if you consider what you see in the world around us, or even in just the most recent history that we're very familiar with over the last 50 or 100 years, man has a knack of making a mess of things. It's just wandering amongst all leaderless by ourselves, whether we use ourselves as the measure or some other thing in life. Was, you know, the Greeks made up the pantheon of gods and other things. It makes a mess of life. It makes a true mess of life. God created us in the garden as a perfect creation. And as long as that order was maintained by man continuing in what God had instructed him to do, to tend to the garden, there was perfection. And it was at the point of the deception and the sin being cast out of the garden that things become a mess. And so you have this separation between man and God, because God no longer walks amongst us like he did with Adam and Eve in the garden. And so how do we know who God is anymore? How do we know who God is anymore? Because if you look at the world around him, you see the evidence of a creator, but you don't know who he is or how he thinks. And so we go through a journey. If you look at the scripture and its story arc of what it's there to teach us, after all, in Galatians it's called a tutor, a schoolmaster, to bring us to Christ. Christ is the perfection of what it is that we find in God's revealed will for us. But we find thousands of years of God interacting with man in order to bring us back to the place where everything started, which is to have a relationship with God and know who he is, and have a purpose in life that is actually good and productive for us. And so that we can understand what it means to be abandoned and left to our ways and fall in destruction and mess. Because that's what we see around us. And so, as it relates then to Jesus, Jesus is God in the flesh. He's God's only Son. And he came to this earth to be a direct representation and image of who God is. Jesus refers to himself, and John the writer refers to Jesus as the true and perfect reflection of God. And so, therefore, to be a disciple of Christ is to be a learner and a follower of God once again. Because we have him, and we can see him, and we can behold him, and we can learn for what does it mean to follow after God again. Because without him, life is going to be a mess. And we'll be wandering around, trying to figure things out, thinking that you find the ideas only to learn that they're a worthless sand in our hands yet again. And if there's anything that I've learned in my few years of life here on this earth is that life just leaves you with lots of things that you can enjoy for a season, for a brief period of time, but nothing endures in this world. And so look for the only thing that truly does endure, which is that relationship with God. And that's what I want to explore with you today as we look at this subject. So in Matthew, the 4th chapter, a context where Jesus is beginning to find and discover the different disciples, the apostles, his inner circle, that is going to form the group that he goes around with during his ministry. It reads in Matthew, the 4th chapter, beginning in verse 18, "While walking by the Sea of Galilee, he saw two brothers, Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew, his brother, casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And he said to them, 'Follow me, and I will make you fishers of men.' And immediately they left their nets and followed him. And going on from there, he saw two other brothers, James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, in the boat with Zebedee, their father, mending their nets, and he called them. And immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. And so what are a few things that we can learn or see out of this context right away? First of all, the imperative or the direction, the command to follow me. And what that helps us understand is that there's authority in the acceptance of Jesus' authority based upon the truth that we know who he is and to know him and to follow him. And so there's that very introductory phrase, follow me. But then there's furthermore, what by following him is going to happen. And I will make you. Now, God just doesn't look at us and wave away our ability to have free will. But what he's saying is I'm going to give within you a new heart, a process of transforming us from what we were before to what Jesus wants us to be and we can be by following him. And then he goes further, so it's not just about seeing him as the authority and following him, but then there's a third component to it, which is important. He says, I will make you fishers of men. So our actions are now going to take on a new meaning and purpose. And so a disciple of Jesus has a purpose, a mission. And I will say this, brethren, while we come together and it is important, our purpose and mission of being a disciple of Christ is to not sit in a pew on Sunday. That's good for our hearts and it's good for our spirits and we need that. But that's not where the mission ends. And so to be fishers of men means that we must have a continual action in our lives that is oriented towards his purpose, which was to go out to seek and to save that which is lost. Now, here's a few other things that are interesting in word studies. So we think of the word Christian as being very identifying. But did you know the Christian phrase, a word, only appears three times in New Testament Scripture? Believer, four times. Saint, 62 times. Disciple, 263 times. Now, I mention this because words have impact and words repeated have repetitive impact. And so when we see a word such as disciple used, understand it means something. And I know that may be kind of obvious, but we tend to, I know I can, easily read over things multiple times and not recognize its significance. So being a disciple has significance. Very, very high significance. Which is why I want to pause on this today as we consider what it means then to be a disciple of Jesus in this memorial today. And it's interesting that the word disciple is never used in the Old Testament. Now, you can't reason from the absence of information. But I will say, if you look at the Old Law, that was a born-in relationship with God. Now, you could become a proselyte and go through a practice to become a Jew, but you were a proselyte. You were never a disciple of Jewish faith. You were a proselyte. You tried to become one part of it. Now, that's not to say that there aren't follower relationships and actions and things that are used, but that relationship was fundamentally different in how it was described than what it is that we have with Jesus. And I think there's also significance in that, especially as we look at what's the authority or the head as it means to be a disciple. So now let's go on a little bit further. Let's look at some context then where this word is used. John 8, 31 to 32. So Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples. And you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. A disciple is not above his teacher, but everyone when he is fully trained, will be like his teacher. And then in John 13, by this all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love one another. And you may remember it's been a very tumultuous year. We started this year with that actual context. And what we had is an ambition to do this year in doing things as a congregation and trying to spur on getting together more often. Unfortunately, lots of events have caused us to fail that miserably. I hope to and look forward to taking that up again one day. But understand, and I want to remind us, what we are known by most as being disciples of Jesus is our love for one another. It's what Jesus says. And so do we go through life having a priority, a feeling, an affectionate wanting to be and do things for one another as Christians, as disciples of His. Very, very important, and we should focus on that all the more. So now, what does disciple mean? It means a learner and a follower. Learner and a follower. And see, this is the key. This is the reason why I said a moment ago, to be a disciple of Jesus is not just to come and sit in a pew on Sunday. Yes, we learn. Yes, we rebuild in our faith and our hearts and want to go on and spur each other to love and good works, as is said before. But to be a follower means that that continues on even after we leave this place today. Or even after you do your next Bible study. Or even after it is that you're together with a brother and you're praying. This is about a continuing, thoughtful relationship and patterning ourselves after Jesus Christ and what He came to do. So it is then thinking the way Jesus thinks, feeling the way that Jesus feels, and acting and reacting the way Jesus does. And if there's one thing that you see in going through the different accounts of Jesus interacting with people, Jesus didn't go through one part of His life and then He was Jesus, and then another part of His life He'd go through and He's just the carpenter. They were not two separate worlds. It was one world for Him. One mission, one thing, one purpose in His mind, and that was to interact people, to seek and to save that which is lost. Yeah, sure, there's actions that go along with in order to do that through life that require us to take time to do. Jesus, early in His life, was a carpenter. I can speculate with pretty high confidence that there was still a whole lot of spiritual conversations happening while He's shaping wood. So, what do we do, and how do we think about that? And I spur us on to that comment in particular, don't compartmentalize life. Not like that. What we should be at the end of the day is representing Jesus in the way that He lived His life should be a pattern for us in how we live ours. Yes, there are day-to-day and sometimes mundane things, but it doesn't mean that we are any less a disciple of Jesus in those events than they are at the times when we're having a deep spiritual conversation with somebody. And we need to go through life understanding that. But what is it not? What it definitely is not is thinking that we're better than the world, or being better than other Christians, for all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. So may it never be that I build myself up a proud heart as if this puts me in some special place, representatively speaking, above somebody else. It doesn't. I'm a disciple, you're a disciple, we're both pursuing Jesus and His truth and His purpose in our lives. And we all need to be spurred on to want to do that all the more. But it doesn't mean that I'm better than anybody else at what that is. And it certainly doesn't mean, as I've amplified before, a learner only. So now let's go through and look at a few things. I think to become a learner part is pretty easy for us. We understand that one intuitively, but I'll remind us here about a few things to become a learner of Christ. Matthew chapter 11, beginning in verse 28, "Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." And then in John 20, "Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book, but these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in His name." You know, the very foundation of discipleship is knowing who it is that you're following. That's why I think intuitively you understand and know that being a learner of Jesus is at the very foundation of it all. But do we understand its impact? See, that's the thing that I think we miss sometimes. So in the first contact, learn from me is connected with finding rest and being able to go through life and understand that Jesus' burden, His yoke, His ability to learn from Him is representatively much easier than anything else that you can learn in life. There's an adage that goes something to this effect. You know, when you can learn from somebody else, those are the easy, cheap lessons. The expensive lessons come from life itself. Because a lot of times those lessons, unfortunately, have high costs and consequences in duration that we just can't undo. And so what Jesus is calling for us to do in Matthew 11 is really to say, learn the easy way. I can show you what it means to be following God because I am. And if you follow after me, you can find the easy lessons of life to be able to do this the easy way. And then the other impact is understanding that by learning and being a disciple of Jesus, that's what results as the ability to have life in his name, as is said in John the 20th chapter. There is life in nobody else's name. There's only life in Jesus and what he's done for us. But now let's concentrate really more so on what does it mean to be a follower of Christ. And a couple of contexts here. One we're going to start with, which should be pretty familiar, but it connects two thoughts here that I think, unfortunately, we think about this parable that he uses here at the end in isolation for its real meaning, which actually starts just before it. So he starts by saying in verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven." There's that relationship between being a learner and a follower. You can't just be a learner and say, "I want to follow you, Lord, in name only," but then do nothing. Because he's going to say, that's the we'll be able to enter the kingdom of heaven because you have to be able to do the will of my Father. As he continues, he says, "On that day many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many mighty works in your name?' And then will I declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of lawlessness.'" And so with that now said, now he gives you a parable to explain what does this really mean representatively as we think about this from a foundation point of view. So here's where he says something more familiar with us. I'm going to guess you probably remember this one probably a lot more readily. "Everyone then who hears these words of mine and does them will be like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall because it had been founded on the rock. And everyone who hears these words of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat against that house. And it fell, and great was the fall of it." And so what endures is what is built upon the foundation. See, that's the connection, the thing that I think we understand and relate to. But that means you've got to build something. And that's what it means to be a follower of his. Yes, the foundation is him in his words, in us to be able to learn and understand it. But you've got to build something. And that's the impact that I think he's trying to show us with that parable of the wise man building his house on the rock. Let's look at another one. Matthew chapter 16. "And then Jesus told his disciples, 'If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it.'" What he's fundamentally talking about here is choice. And as I referenced a little bit earlier, don't compartmentalize your faith with your life, because what that represents is a false idea that somehow these two things are separate. They're not. Jesus didn't separate them, so why should we? Say that because that's an absurd notion, right? We shouldn't be trying to do that. But then what that does mean is going through life, there's going to be presented choices about what do I prioritize? What do I do? Am I going to use this encounter for Jesus, or am I going to be more selfish with my time and pass it by and move on? Am I going to be fearful about what might happen to me because of what I say, and so I don't say anything and therefore move on? So life is going to be presented with choices, and lots of them. Lots of them. And so what we choose to do is what he's saying here. So if you want to try to protect your life, you're going to find that you actually protect nothing. Because what's a life lived without faith? Seriously, think about that. And I realize, you know, lots of things that we go through in life right now, living in 2020, and all these concerns about health and everything else. But let me say this very clearly. You cannot go through life thinking that you can protect yourself from a virus and then lose your faith. What have you fought for then? What have you fought for? What are you trying to live life for? It's not just to live, but you must be living for something. Something. And if that something is not Jesus, then you need to reground yourself then in what he's warning us about here. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. John chapter 15, "But this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love." And so how do we prove? This is Jesus' words. How do we prove that we are his disciples? By bearing much fruit. And what that means is our actions, the things that we do, the impacts that we have on people, the interactions that we can use for his purpose, for his good, or the things that we can do for people, simple gestures to relieve burdens, to be able to show that we care, to be able to relate to people in times of hardship. And there I'll say, there's certainly plenty of that going around right now. And so there's not for a lack of things that we can do as it means to bearing much fruit. There's plenty of fruit to be gained out of being a disciple of Jesus. And then we have this context in Matthew chapter 10. A disciple is not above his teacher. I want to reiterate that, coming back to something about what it means to be a disciple of Jesus, is fundamentally humble and lowly of heart, because that's who Jesus was. After all, he did nothing wrong in being subjected to the crucifixion on a cross. But yet he did it anyway, because it was for our benefit that he did that. And that takes an immensely humble person to go through an unjust punishment and do it because you know it will benefit somebody else. As Paul relates over in Romans, the 5th chapter, it takes somebody really, really special to want to do that for. And we might do it for a close friend or a family member, but to do it for the ones that reject and revile and spit on you, yet that's what Jesus did. And so when he says here, a disciple is not above his teacher, we need to become as humble as he is and was in serving and seeking for the benefit of others. Nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher. And that's as much as we can aspire to, by the way, is to be like his teacher. And the servants like his master. If they have called the master of the house of Beelzebub, how much more will they malign those of his household? So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. What he's basically saying is don't fear what happens and be patient in seeing it resolved. Because God will see things through for those that are truly his. So here's another way to look at this. So we look at it from the perspective of the admonitions of Jesus and what he said about disciples. But now how did Paul go about doing this? And if you actually read Paul's writings, I think what you see reflected most of all is a 180% or degree, 100% transformation of his heart. We only see Saul's life before he became known Paul for a very brief period of time before his conversion. But as Paul recounts it for himself, he went around breathing threats on Christians, going from city to city, locking them up in order to show them harm. He was not a nice guy. He was not a good guy. But that encounter with Jesus on the road to Damascus fundamentally changed him, transformed the way that he looked at life. And coming out the other side, I think what you see in Paul in his writings is he's thankful. He's thankful deep to the bottom of his heart for many things that he's benefited from by being a disciple of Jesus. And so here we find a small accounting of that in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, beginning in verse 7. "But we were gentle among you, like a nursing mother taking care of her own children. So being affectionately desirous of you, we were ready to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own selves, because you had become very dear to us. For you remember, brothers, our labor and toil, we worked night and day, that we might not be a burden to any of you, while we proclaim to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses in God also, how holy and righteous and blameless was our conduct toward you believers. For you know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted each one of you and encouraged you and charged you to walk in a manner worthy of God, who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. And if you really sit back and soak in that, I think you can understand the view now that Paul has of his relationship with Jesus in giving him this level of humility and humbleness of heart to want to do and to serve so much for others. Because it literally just jumps out of the pages of the words that he chooses to use, I think, as you read a context like this. He had become somebody that was, his sole purpose in life was to be a disciple of Jesus and represent him in every day of his life. In some of the most mundane things, as he tells them, that he worked night and day, so he's laboring in order to not be a burden to them. So him, again, the life of being a disciple and the life of the mundane work was no difference. It was all the same thing, all blended into who Paul was. And that's who he had become, and that's who we should look to become like ourselves. So what does it really mean to be a disciple? Here's just a few of the things then that we've covered today. It means learning about him, means becoming like Jesus, abiding in Jesus' words, bearing fruit, loving other disciples, loving Jesus, bearing our cross, and forsaking all. So what is it that I can do? I want to leave you with something else in addition to what we will take part of here as a memorial to Jesus and his life and the discipleship that he's offered. First of all, for fathers or husbands, lead your families and have the heart of the Master. Mothers, wives, support your husband, teach your children, not to leave anybody out, but if you're single or you're a child still in your house, honor your parents, learn to serve others. But in everything, really, it's these themes. Learn more, be quick to serve, and glorify God in everything. Because a life that is truly following a disciple of Jesus, that's what Jesus did. So it doesn't take much to figure that out. And then last, I want to leave you with this thought before we take this memorial today. A faith that gives nothing, costs nothing, and suffers nothing is worth absolutely that, nothing. And so what are you willing to do to truly learn and follow after Christ?